Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you every Sunday night by Cal1020.com. That's 10 miles, 20 bands on Sunday, February 15th from Del Mar to Encinitas and back. We're also brought to you by Core Sports, the very best in women's activewear, Challenged Athletes Foundation, San Diego Triathlon Challenge coming up on Sunday, October 19th. And, of course, you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville Radio on iTunes. Our next guest is a three-time Olympian, a three-time national cyclocross champion, two-time winner of the infamous Leadville 100. Mr. Todd Wells joins us. Todd, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
Hey, so are you in Durango?
Yep, I'm just got back to Durango about a week ago, so things are good here in Colorado.
So do you get to hang out with my old roommate, Ned Overend?
I do get to spend some time with Ned. You know, he is out there in California quite a bit these days, but I think he is headed back in the next couple of days. So I'm sure I'll see him.
Do you get to ride much with him?
A little bit. You know, we have a pretty good group ride here that we both usually go out on. Otherwise, we seem to be on opposite training schedules.
He's pretty amazing, though, huh?
Yeah, what that guy does is incredible.
Especially as old. I always give him crap. Went to dinner last week. I'm like, dude, you're old. And he's like, yeah, but I can still ride. He can still ride. That guy's unbelievable. So, Todd, growing up, were you a Colorado guy? Where'd you grow up?
No, I grew up in upstate New York near Kingston.
Yeah.
And was always into BMX, you know, the endurance, mountain bikes, road bikes. That stuff wasn't really on my radar, but I loved riding and racing BMX. And, so I did that all through my school years.
Well, that's John Tomac. A lot of the guys started on BMX back in the day. Did BMX? What was the transition when you went from BMX to jumping on a mountain bike? What led to that?
Yeah, you know, when I was kind of getting ready to graduate high school, mountain biking was starting to become pretty big. And coming from a BMX background, I always assumed I would jump over and do the dual slalom or the downhill.
Right.
But you know, at that point, you kind of did everything. That you didn't specialize so much as guys nowadays. So I got a cross-country bike, started riding that, and it turned out within a couple months of riding that cross-country bike, I had gotten better at cross-country than I had my whole childhood, 10 years racing BMX. So I was destined for the endurance side of things.
So you realized pretty quickly that you were more of an endurance guy than just a fast twitch guy.
Exactly. It became pretty obvious pretty quick.
And so when you went to college at Fort Lewis, is that what brought you to Colorado?
Yeah, I like I said, growing up in New York, I always thought I loved racing BMX. I loved being outside. I always envisioned myself moving somewhere south, say Florida or something, where it was sunny and warm all the time. I could ride all year. And a friend of mine, one of the only other guys that rode mountain bikes in my town, was headed out to Durango. He told me, you got to check this place out. All the pros live out there, Ned and Tomac,
yeah,
and Furtado, Miles. And, you know, he's like, it's right next to Arizona, so you should come out. And I had never been west of Ohio before. So we loaded up his car, drove out, and I've been out here ever since.
Now, was there, while you were in college at Fort Lewis, were you a technology guy?
No, I started at Fort Lewis as an exercise science guy.
Yeah.
Took a little bit of time off to just focus on racing and did that for a few years. Ended up deciding that, you know, racing didn't work out for me initially. So I went back to school. I went down to the University of Arizona to finish up my degree in management information systems. So I switched over to technology kind of midway through.
Gotcha. So mountain biking was in the Olympics for the first time in 96. Was that on the radar for you, or is that you were too young at that point?
I was just kind of getting into mountain biking at that point.
Yeah.
So I knew about it, but from my perspective, that wasn't something I was striving for or something that I thought, hey, you know, one day I'm going to do that. It was just kind of mountain bikes are in the Olympics.
Mountain bikes are Olympics, but that really doesn't have anything to do with me.
Exactly.
Now, then did you start thinking about 2000? Because you were on the Olympic team in 2004. And that, you know, it's interesting when I think back to the days of the, you know, Norma National Series and all that stuff with Tinker Juarez and Ned and Tomac. It was pretty, those guys were pretty big names, and that series traveled around the country, and there was a lot of media associated with it. With mountain biking now, you get a little, because there's, seems like there's so many different types of events that it's it can get somewhat confusing.
Yeah, when I was getting going back there in the late 90s,
yeah,
I started out as a semi-pro.
Yep.
That was the first year they had that category. That category's kind of gone away.
That was the Norba National, you mean, Norba Series?
Exactly. It was a transition from amateur to pro.
Right.
And so started out in that and then raced pro for 2 years. And right then in, I think it was 98, the end of 98, I took a couple years off and went back to school, finished my degree. So I kind of missed that round of the Olympics.
Gotcha.
For 2000. But then getting to the other part of your question, mountain biking at that time, like I said, it was starting to be more specialized then, where we had cross-country racers, downhill only, dual slalom.
Yeah.
But now there are so many different disciplines. You have the cross-country.
Short track.
There's even an eliminator, which is a couple-minute race.
Wow.
Like a sprint. You have the downhill, and guys that race downhill generally don't race four cross because they're so specialized in each of those divisions. You have the enduro. You have the marathon cross country. You have these ultra marathons like the Leadville. You have the 24-hour races. We have this new Munga race they're having in South Africa this winter, 1,000 kilometers across South Africa.
1,000 kilometers.
1,000 kilometers. You should check it out. It's the Munga, and it's got a $1 million prize purse.
Wow.
Teams of two, and it goes three deep. First place is $750,000. Second is $100,000, and third is $50,000.
Wow.
And it's just as fast as you can get across from point A to point B, whether you sleep or not is up to you, but they're estimating it's going to take about 40 hours.
Have you found a teammate yet?
Well, I've been thinking about it. You know, that I do some long-distance stuff with Leadville, but that is something that I'm totally untested in that area.
So when you say teams of two, do you ride together or is it relay format?
No, you ride together. So it's similar to the Cape Epic event, which is another, you know, discipline of mountain biking, stage racing, and that's a team event as well. So you always have to be within a minute or two of your teammate for the duration of the race.
So you have to ride 1,000K.
Exactly. Yep.
Wow. Now, is there good prize money in the sport? Because there's so many different disciplines, can someone make a good living as a mountain biker at this point?
Well, the best guys can do pretty well.
Okay.
You know, it's steep where you have, you know, guys making good money, and then
nothing.
10 places below them, the guys making nothing.
Guys living out of their car.
Exactly. So it's, you know, yes, it's possible, but there's just not a lot of people that can do it.
You know, I look at the variety of things that you've done, from, you know, winning collegiate mountain bike champs 2 years in a row, and then cyclocross national champion, and then short track champion. How do you balance all that? What, when you race cyclocross, how different is that from mountain bike cross country?
Yeah, well, initially I would race cyclocross, and it was kind of a mixture of road and mountain bike athletes, and
yeah,
the road guys would come off their season. The mountain bikers would come off their season. We'd meet up, and everyone was, you know, they took it serious when they were there. But between the races, leading up to it, it wasn't such a big deal. It was more kind of an off-season way to stay fit.
Right, for both groups. So nobody was specializing in it. You guys were both coming from different disciplines.
Right. And the races, cyclocross races, are always 1 hour.
Okay.
When I first started racing cross in the late 90s, mountain bike races were longer. They were two and a half hours. Cyclocross races were 1 hour, so they were very different.
Right.
Now, the cross-country Olympic format, they shoot to have the races 1.5 hours to 1 hour and 55 minutes. Cyclocross races are still 1 hour, so the races are becoming more similar, but the riders are specializing more. Now, in the U.S., we have guys, you know, probably 5 to 10 guys making a pretty good living just racing cyclocross. So the level of cyclocross and competition of it has come up a lot over the years.
Sure, because you got guys specializing, and then you guys are still trying to sort of step over from mountain biking at the same time, and that gets so now you're going against guys who are specializing.
Yep, and the season cyclocross used to start kind of mid-October. Now they have the first cyclocross race 2 weeks ago, I think.
Wow.
And our national champs used to be mid-December. Now they're mid-January. So that season is stretched out. And for me personally, my mountain bike season is stretched out. The Norbis used to start in May. Now we have the Pro XCT U.S. Cup Series starting in the first weekend of March. And I'm still racing mountain bike races like La Ruta in mid-November. So the seasons have stretched out, and guys have specialized. They've both gotten harder. Mountain bike and the cyclocross have definitely become more competitive.
So in 2011, you won La Ruta de los Conquistadores. Talk a little bit about that. Is that in South America, or is that event at?
Yeah, that event is in Costa Rica, and when I was... That's a three-day stage race. That year in particular, 2011, it was a four-day event. But originally it was three-day. It's three-day again. It's been going on for about 20 years, I think.
Yeah.
So generally it's a three-day race. But anyway, you start in this town of Jaco on the Pacific Ocean. Literally, you start on the beach of the ocean, and you ride all the way across the country, finish at the Caribbean on the beach.
Wow.
Three days later.
Yeah, how long a ride?
So the first day for us is about, the top guys do it in about 4 hours, and then the next 2 days are in the mid 3 hours.
Yeah.
So it's not, for an elite level rider, it's not too bad, but you have a wide range of ability, so there are people that are just out there looking to complete the race, and we start at 6 a.m. It gets dark there about 6 p.m., so some of these guys are coming in at 6 p.m., they get a transfer to the hotel, cleaned up, they're not even at their room till 8 o'clock, and they have to be ready on the bike 6 a.m. the next morning to go again.
And you guys were done before 10.
Yes. So it's challenging for the elite guys because you're racing each other, and then it's challenging for some of the amateurs as well because they're just, you know, racing for a personal best or racing just to complete the course. So that is cool, and it's unique. We stay together in the same hotels. And so everybody has their own personal story and personal battles out there, and it's great to hear different people's stories from the day. Last year, there was a huge python out on the course in this river crossed.
Yeah.
It was like maybe some people had gotten pictures of it. It was 12 feet long, like a foot thick.
Oh. Just waiting for you guys.
Just waiting for us. But it's really cool. You ride through these ultra remote areas of Costa Rica. You climb up over a volcano. It's just a really unique way to see the country. And, you know, it's awesome to be able to do a mountain bike race like that. I come from a cross country background where we're riding around in 14 minute circles. So to get out and ride across the country is, it's such a cool experience.
Have you ever, I mean, it's funny because you're racing all over the world, and I'm sure there's times you're racing in a place you've never been to before, and you're sort of counting on the race directors to have this thing marked well enough so that you live and actually find your way to wherever you're supposed to go. Have there been times when you're out there going, I'm not quite sure where I am and how the hell I'm going to get back?
Well, that La Ruta race, I had heard all these stories. I did as much research talking to people beforehand that had done the previous editions.
Yeah.
And they had told me how it was poorly marked and they got lost for 2 hours. And they told me all these horror stories. So I went down there with these really low expectations. And I would just wait. If you're in the lead, you have a lead motorcycle. So there you're good.
Yeah.
But if you're not in the lead, I would always try to, you know, be around another rider. The local riders all know the course well. They pre-ride it in the months or weeks leading up to the event. And if I came to an intersection I wasn't sure of, one or two times I would just wait for the next guy to catch me so I could make sure I would go the right way.
I mean, you think about it. It's not like, okay, I've got a sprint right now. It's 3 days.
Yep.
If you lose a little time, it's better than getting lost forever.
But, you know, with these longer... The cross-country courses are always marked really well. They're short. it's no problem. But with these longer endurance races like La Ruta, like Leadville, I did a race in Switzerland about a month ago called Le Grand Ray, and that is kind of their version of Leadville. Our Leadville is 104 miles. It's got about 10,000 feet of climbing.
Yep.
Their version is 75 miles. It's got 16,000 feet of climbing.
Oh, my God.
And it's all through the Alps.
Yeah.
So it is, it's beautiful. It's an amazing area. During the race, I didn't get to, you know, enjoy it very much. But the week leading up to it, when I would go out and try to pre-ride this course, I had my Garmin file downloaded to try to follow the course. I'm looking for signs. But there were times I'm out there in the Alps. I don't know where I am, how far I am from home. The Garmin says I'm off the course. I don't see any arrows. So it is pretty cool that you get out there and you kind of, you don't know where you are. The phone doesn't get reception. Nowadays, we're so spoiled with the GPS
yeah.
phone. And I mean, we pretty much know where we are. We can find out in 30 seconds which way to go.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a throwback.
Oh, my God. So what wildlife have you run into out there, either training or racing, where you're just going, oh, you come around a bend and, uh-oh, there's something?
I didn't see the python that day at La Ruta, but one of the guys in our group had seen a puma up in one of the trees.
Wow.
I didn't get to see that either. Usually when I'm racing, I'm so focused on what's going on, but when I'm out there just riding, you know, I've seen pretty much, you name it, I've seen it out there. I've yet to see a mountain lion, which I'm
That's
happy
good.
About.
Yeah.
But, it's, like I said, you get out there in those remote areas, and it's just, it's so different from kind of your everyday, your day-to-day life or what you
sure.
do normally, that it's so cool to be out there and just kind of on your own.
So when I've talked to Ned about, you know, training for mountain bike, a lot of time he said he would do a lot of road riding just because, you know, you need to have some balance. Do you spend much time on the road as well?
Yeah, I also spend quite a bit of time on the road. I probably am, when I'm in Durango, I'm probably 60-40 on the road.
Okay.
I kind of split my time between Durango and Tucson. I go to Tucson in the for the winter.
Yeah.
And when I'm down there, I'm a little bit more road focused, maybe 70-30, 75-25. But the road is nice. It allows you to get in that volume and those kind of steady rates without beating yourself up too much. Unless you have some really buff trails, you know, you take a bit more of a beating, just a general fatigue on the body on the trails than you do on the road.
Are there times when you're out there riding in, you know, out in the wilderness and it's just beautiful and you're thinking to yourself, I'm at work right now. This is how I make my living, riding out here in the beauty.
Yes, I think about it as I get older more and more. I know I've been pretty lucky to make a career out of this and had a, you know, I've had a great lifestyle and a great career. So I know that once it's over, I'm going to be in for a rude awakening.
You mean getting a real job and going to a desk and stuff?
Yeah. You know, even a job, a real job that you enjoy, I don't think it's going to be quite as nice as having something that's your passion. You know, I get paid to ride my bike. I would be paying to ride my bike if I weren't a elite athlete. So, you know, it doesn't get much better than that.
So you're what, like 38-ish, something like that?
Yep.
So so you're 38 and you've been doing this since the, you know, 90s. Does it ever get old?
The racing itself and the training, no,
yeah.
not at all. As you get older, the travel,
right,
just being gone for so long, that gets kind of old. But even more than the travel, when we do these races, you know, say I do a race in Europe, I got to fly there at least a week early to get acclimated.
Right.
And then you have this big event. It's like, yeah, it's cool. You're in Italy. You want to see this stuff. You know, you hear Italy has this, that. You don't get to experience much of that because the whole time you're focused on the event, you're resting. You're not out walking around checking out the city. You're sitting in your hotel room with your feet up after riding, trying to stay awake. That part of it gets old.
Because basically, you're going to these beautiful parts of the world, and you're in a hotel room when you're not when you're not training.
Yeah, and so, you know, that when you're younger and you're, you know, it's all brand new, just going to those places is really cool and exciting.
Exactly.
But when you've been there 10 times and you've never seen anything of it and you know you're not going to see it again, it that part is, you know, not so great. And then with cycling also, the riding, the training, all of that is awesome. But over the years, it's gotten, you know, guys, the small percentages are making big differences. So now everybody's worried about their weight and what they're eating. And, you know, it's all power to weight ratios, this and that. So you train a lot. You're super hungry. A lot of times people get into riding so they can eat a bunch or enjoy whatever.
Right.
When you get to the very top level, if there's a race like Leadville where you're climbing 10,000 feet at high altitude, you have to be as fit as possible and as light as possible. So not only are you training a lot, but then you're trying not to eat a lot, and you're trying to, you know, lose weight and going to bed hungry, that type of stuff. I don't enjoy that at all.
It's funny. We were over at Chris Horner's house last year, and I'm like, Chris, there's no food in this house. And he goes, yeah, no, I can't have food in the house. We go out for salad, but, you know, I can't. If there's something here, I'd eat it because every night I'm going to bed hungry. And I'm drinking a lot of, you know, fizzy water, just trying to confuse my body or trying to basically fill my belly up so that I can go to sleep.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, but you can see it works.
It does.
You look at what Horner's been able to do lately, and I think he's probably lost a lot of weight from the time he was first became a pro to now, and you can see his results have just skyrocketed.
Yeah, the weight part of it makes a huge difference. So talk a little bit about Olympic experience, three Olympics. What, going there the first time was, because you've done a lot of mountain bike races and world championships, things like that. Going to your first Olympics in 2004 in Athens, how special was that?
Yeah, the Olympics is, for as a mountain biker, that where we don't play in front of a stadium sport,
right,
and or in front of a stadium crowd, and it's more kind of a side sport. In Europe, it's big, and we'll get 10,000 or 15,000 people at some World Cups. But in general, a lot of times you're out there on your own or very small scale. To go from that and go to the Olympics where you're part of the, you know, this U.S. team, and you walk into the Olympic Village, and the whole thing is just this grand stage and this huge, huge, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just such a, it's such a world stage, big deal.
It's a show.
It's
the ultimate show. Yeah.
And, you know, you're in these, you go into the village and all the athletes are walking around, and you have, you know, these tiny gymnasts that are 4 feet high and weigh, you know, 75 pounds.
Yeah.
Then you have Yao Ming walking around, and he's like 7 feet tall and weighs 300 pounds or something. And you have all these really extreme body types. And people are all the greatest athletes, you know, in the world. It's such a humbling experience going and being a part of that.
Well, knowing that you are, you know, I mean, sometimes I'm sure when you're traveling your own little circles, you're not realizing I'm at the very pinnacle of my sport. But when you go to the Olympics and you're going, okay, this gymnast and Yao Ming wouldn't be here if they weren't the very best, which means I'm pretty darn good.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's such a cool experience. And then the race itself is, well, for London, for example, we had a huge crowd there. London, I had been to Athens and Beijing, and both of those countries are, you know, Greece has economic problems.
Right.
China has economic problems. They don't have as, you know, it's not as stable of an economy as the UK. And so I feel like they're not as into the different sports. They have other problems to worry about.
Right.
But the UK, you know, they're the top.
They're cycling.
Top level,
crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Level country, and they're into cycling, and they appreciate their sports. So, I mean, there were 30,000 people packed into this little mountain bike venue that the laps probably took 13 minutes, and we looped cloverleafed back, so we were never out of this crowd for more than 3 or 4 minutes. And just racing under those circumstances, it's just amazing.
So talk a little bit about Leadville. You've been to Leadville 4 times. You've won it twice, finished third twice. You've never been off the podium. I won it this year, right? What is it that makes Leadville so special?
Yeah, the first year I did Leadville was 2010, I think. 10, 11.
Yeah.
13, yeah, 2010. And I had, you know, the guys at one of the regional sales guys was like, come on, you should do this race. It's a big deal. And I wasn't that into it. You know, Leadville is mostly dirt road.
Sure.
And coming from a cross-country technical background, I thought, that's not really, you
It's
know.
A fire road. Yeah.
And so I came from racing the World Cup in Europe where we're racing for an hour and a half at sea level. And the next week I raced Leadville, which is at the lowest point, 10,000 feet, the highest point, nearly 13,000 feet.
Yeah.
And instead of an hour and a half, it's over 6 hours. And I was cursing that guy after the race. And I said, you know what? I'm never coming back to this race again.
Now, you finished third that year?
Yes.
Yeah.
Third.
And your first time out, yeah.
And, you know, the next year I was back. And that year, though, I was able to train for it. I said I wouldn't come back unless I could train for it. And I had time, 3 or 4 weeks in Colorado, where I could go to high altitude and I could put in some big volume and do these long... Some of the climbs at Leadville are about an hour long.
Wow.
And in the cross country, we're racing climbs that are 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, completely different. But being able to really train for it, focus on the altitude, focus on the distance, focus on the diet beforehand, and to be able to go there and execute it was so cool, especially because it's something that at the time I hadn't done very much of. So it was a discipline that I wasn't very familiar with, and it was really satisfying to go there. And it is, you know, I do a cross-country race. It's an hour and a half. I'm completely cooked afterwards because I've been riding at or above my threshold the entire time. Leadville, you have a different kind of tired. It's not as intense, but it's just one notch below, and you ride at that pace, you know, for 6 hours.
Oh.
So it's a really unique event, and it was cool, and there's drafting involved and just all sorts of stuff that is, you know, a little bit different from what I'm used to. So that event was really cool, and since then I've been hooked. I've been a big Leadville fan, and it's amazing. That race, too, you have people that are, you know, they're going to race for the win. You have people that are hoping to finish, people that are hoping to make it one checkpoint further than they have in the past.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's such a range, and with everybody racing out there on the same course, I think it gives each person an appreciation for what the other ones are doing.
Well, and that, so 2011, you won that. That was actually a great year because you won that and you won Ruta the same year. And then this year, you win Leadville again and the U.S. Cycling Cross Country Nationals. So you're getting better. What the hell? As you're getting older, you're getting better.
Well, sometimes. You know, you plan to be good at certain races, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. And this year it happens to work out for me. And as I get older, you know, they say you get slower, whatever. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think you realize what you need to do to be fast.
Yeah.
And it's just you decide it's not worth it. It's not worth going to bed hungry, or I don't want to do this or that.
Right.
So I'm not so sure that you actually slow down physically, you know, while you're still racing within a couple of years of whatever. But it's more mentally and your willingness to do what it takes to, you know, reach that level.
Yeah, it was interesting. I had one of the athletes not long ago tell me that they had reached a point in their career where they knew they didn't want to go deep anymore. And they had been there to that dark side and knew that on race day they could go to a certain level but couldn't, you know, that's when they knew that it was time to hang it up. They knew that they couldn't get past that. You know, when things were going to get hot, tough and someone was going to make a move, they were just going to go have fun with that. But I'm not going any harder than that. It seems like that because you're training so much smarter and you're so attuned to what your body needs that you are improving with age. Are you doing other things? Are you cross training? Have you incorporated other things in, or is it just the fact that you are smarter after all these years?
No, I do a bit more cross training now. I feel like just for my general physical fitness as I get older, you know, I do a bit more strength training, stuff like that. When I was 20 years old, I could go out and run for half an hour, and I might be sore the next day, but the day after that, I'd be fine. Or I could go do some super hard workout in the weight room, having not done anything for, you know, months, and I'd be sore for a day or two, and then I'd be fine. Now, if I do something other than cycling or other than what I'm trained for, you know, I'm sore for 4, 5, 6 days.
Welcome to our world, yeah.
You know, like shoveling a hole, digging a hole, or,
yeah,
you know, something like that, cutting down a tree. So, you know, I just become more aware, too, that I need to maintain that stuff. And it's again, that's something that, you know, I can be just as effective and keep those muscles and that fitness the same as I could when I was younger, but it takes more. I have to do something for it. I have to train it. I'm aware of it. I know that I need to do something to keep that, and then it's just mentally, am I willing to do that or not?
So do you have a specific person, like a rivalry with somebody, somebody you've gone against for years and years and years, or does it seem like the faces are constantly changing in the races you're doing?
Yeah, and I feel like I'm the only guy left.
You're the only consistent guy. Yeah, you're the only guy. Everybody else is gone.
Yeah, you know, I came in kind of on the tail end of Tomac and all those guys.
Yeah, Ned.
I wasn't
yeah.
really competitive with them. But and then for a good part of my career, I would race against JHK, Adam Craig.
Yeah.
Those guys have all moved on. And now there are new guys coming up, a Sam Schultz, a Steven Ettinger. I have a teammate now, Howard Grotz. So I'm just, you know, kind of moving through the different generations. There's always somebody new to try to fend off or try to get to their level. So it's good. It's, you know, you don't want to get complacent.
No. Well, you know what's cool about what's happening? I love the fact that there's the high school league. And you see colleges now with mountain bike teams. So it seems like that the sport is healthy.
Yeah, what Nike is doing is incredible.
I was at a
Utah State Champs race last year around this time, or October or something. I think it was the first year of their league, and they had maybe 600 kids out there.
Riding mountain bikes.
Riding mountain bikes, and their families are out there with them. And these are kids, of course, some of them were into cycling before and they'd be racing anyway. But I think the majority of these kids just are kind of looking for something to do. They find Nike. And so now you're bringing all these, you know, all these new kids and faces, exposing them to mountain bike racing. And you're exposing their families to that. And then their families, it's a good thing for the families to do with the kids. And you're just creating this whole new group of cyclists out of people that would, you know, maybe they never would have ridden a bike at all. And not only are they cycling for health and fitness, but the kids are into racing.
They love it. No, it's great. And if I'm a parent, I'd much rather have them on the trails than have them riding on the roads and, you know, with out in traffic. It's a lot safer.
Yeah, at that high school age, too, I feel like a lot of kids, the last thing they want to do is hang out with their parents.
Yeah,
and
no question.
Here you go to these races, the parents, the kids all camp out, they're barbecuing, they're riding the course together. It's pretty amazing the bonding, I feel like, that's going on between the parents and the kids at these events. It's something, you know, I haven't been around a lot of that stuff, but that is something that really jumped out at me is, you know, wow, this is a great way to keep the family together and do something that, you know, they all can enjoy. It's not like a forced family trip or forced activity. They want to be out there and they're enjoying that, and really cool.
That is really cool. So is there a fourth Olympics in the future here?
Not for me.
You're done.
I'm done with the Olympic side of the sport. I'm still racing the cross country and, you know, still
Leadville.
Pretty competitive
yeah.
at it.
Yeah.
But I'm more focused and more enjoying these longer endurance races now.
So you think you might be in South Africa for that big event?
There's a chance. I'm not in any way committed to that yet. And, you know, of course, the draw to win $750,000 is big for all of us.
Sure.
And you have guys that race the World Cup cross country, some of the fastest guys in the world, they're thinking about it. You have adventure racers thinking about it.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's really cool. And this being the first time, the first year, it's going to be interesting to see what type of rider, what type of strategy. There's so much that goes into it. And like I said, it is so out of the realm of anything that I've done before. I have, you know, if I were to do it, I have no idea what to expect. And it's going to be really interesting to see what type of riders excel there.
Well, you know what's cool about when things like that come up? It's nobody's really done that. I mean, who's done a 1,000K mountain bike race?
Yeah.
So it's not like anybody's coming in with any advantage. So usually the guys who come in with speed figure out how to adapt to longer, right? It's the same way you took your speed and went to Leadville and refined it a little bit, but you're coming in with that raw speed from shorter distance, and that certainly plays a role. So, you know, speed always wins at the end of the day. Once you, yeah. The rest of it's sort of an eating and drinking contest.
Yeah. It's, yeah, it's going to be interesting, and it's, you know, it's really cool. In the U.S., I haven't heard a lot of talk about it.
No, it's the first I've heard of it. I'm going to look it up. It sounds great.
Yeah, but internationally, there's quite a bit of buzz going on about it. So it's going to be, it's really cool. It's great for mountain bike racing. Just another
absolutely
facet or niche of the sport to get excited about.
Love it. Hey, Todd, thanks so much for taking time. It's really nice to get to know you over the phone. You've had an amazing career, and I love the fact that in your late 30s, you're going better than ever before.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate you. You know, you having me on, and thanks a lot. Hopefully I'll be talking to you again sometime.
I love it. Todd Wells has been our guest. Again, we are Babbittville Radio. We're brought to you by Cal1020.com. 10 miles, 20 bands coming up on Sunday, February 15th, 2015. Core Sports, the very best in women's activewear. Challenge Athletes Foundation, our San Diego Triathlon Challenge coming up on Sunday, October 19th. And, of course, you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville Radio on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.